Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Lay Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul.
Are you dissatisfied with your sex life? Has routine set in your bedroom? Having trouble synchronizing your intimacy rhythms with your partners? Hi, I'm Dr. Renee Longto, sexologist. I help people reach a happier and healthier sexual life. Some need a little information while others need a little trick here and there. But what most people need is to be heard on a subject they rarely talk about. If you want to improve your sexual health, I am the person you need to talk to. Go to my website, drsexology.com, and let's talk.
Good evening. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Lay Erickson. Thank you for joining us tonight. Are you looking to enhance the sexual intimacy with your mate? Are you looking to spice up the sexual routines in and out of the bedroom? Or do you simply have questions that you really, really want to ask a qualified sexologist? I'm very excited. Tonight we're going to have a very exciting show, and we're going to talk about a topic that, you know, we don't really talk about it so much. It's a hot and juicy topic, and we're going to talk about sex and sexuality tonight. So I'm very pleased to have introduced to you our special guest tonight, Dr. Renee Langto from Vancouver. And Dr. Renee Langto, she's a clinical sexologist, a sex coach, and a sexual health educator. And she is live on the show with us tonight. So that means you can call in and ask questions, because we love to hear your questions. And the number to call in toll-free is 1-888-627-6008. That is 1-888-627-6008. So let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Renee. She believes that sex can be fun for both partners in any relationship. Whether you are after your first orgasm or looking for a deeper and more meaningful sexual experience, she has the information and the tricks to help you get there. Dr. Renee Langto obtained a doctorate degree in human sexuality from the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco. As a sexual health educator, she has presented many sexual health seminars to a variety of audiences. She is frequently interviewed by different radio stations and quoted in magazine and newspaper articles. So Dr. Renee can help you with your sexual needs and issues online, by Skype, on phone, or at her office. So for more information about her services, visit her website at drsexology.com. That is drsexology.com. And like I said tonight, if you have any questions, call in. The number is 1-888-627-6008. So welcome, Dr. Renee. I'm very excited to have you on the show tonight. Thank you for coming on a Saturday.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. And I remember when we talked, you know, we said that Saturday night, 9 o'clock, is a great time to talk about sex. And you also said to me, it's also a good time to do some sexual connection too.
Definitely. For us in our house, because we have children, Saturday nights are kind of sacred. We call it, it's mommy and daddy night. And yes. Children are usually far away from us at that time.
Right. So hopefully tonight you can still have mommy and daddy night after our show tonight.
Oh, yes. We have a date at 10 o'clock. So he's getting ready. He's going to get all pampered and everything.
So we have to have you out of here on time then, huh?
Yes, please.
Okay, so just to get started, just tell us what has inspired you to become a sexologist.
Yeah, so it's, you know, everybody has the same story at the beginning. Like every time I meet somebody that works in the sexual field, they always say that they love sex and they always talk about sex. For me, it went one step further, where the majority of the people that I talked to, they felt very comfortable discussing anything sexual with me, regardless if they were young or old. And I've had stories from people that were more than 80 years old. And, you know, like they always opened up and they shared their story and their life journey with their partner. And I was always curious. I always want to know more. So initially, it was the curiosity and being very comfortable in those discussions. But now I find that what I find fascinating is to see the people that I'm helping and to see how at the beginning they come into my office. And I always find, oh, my God, like, how am I going to be able to help them? I always find they look miserable. They look so sad in their story. Like some of them, it's really painful to listen to because they look in pain. They look very distressed. It's sad. There's so much that's involved and on the line for them. And when I can help them, it looks like their entire life has changed. It seems to be people, even their skin color after a few appointments, when it gets better in their life, their skin color gets better. Everything looks brighter. They smile like it's a different person that's sitting in front of me. So it used, like, I went into this field because I like talking about sex and I enjoy sex. And, you know, it was kind of this similar story as all of the other professionals that I've met. But now, like, this work has transformed me quite a lot and, like, giving joy to other people in an area that's very dear to me is very rewarding. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, so it sounds like by talking about sex, the experience, like a almost like a liberation or a transformation.
Yeah, mostly because this subject is such a taboo for most people. They never know where they can go and discuss such issues. So when they find somebody that they can basically say whatever is on their mind, it becomes a big liberation for them.
Yes. So that must be a very interesting topic. Let's say if you go out somewhere or parties and they ask you, what do you do? And you say you're a sexologist. That must be quite a conversation starter.
You know what? It goes both ways. It can start the conversation or it can kill the conversation. I've had some people that thought I was the most intimidating person because they thought I could read through them. And I'm like, oh my God, please don't do this. I'm the easiest person to talk to. But depending on the crowd, it starts or it kills the conversation.
So I have a few questions from listeners.
Yes, please.
So I'd like to start with those questions first and then questions that I think of my own, you know, as a therapist. And so the first question is, this woman, she finds it when her husband or partner kisses her breasts or nipples, she gets very ticklish. What's your suggestion?
So I've dealt with people that are ticklish in a very particular way. I read a book once that I thought was very, very interesting. And the person was talking about you start being ticklish when you're young and you have brothers and sisters and they pin you down on the floor and you're completely powerless. And their touch becomes almost of an, it's like an attack, and your body's reaction is a protection mechanism. So what you have in the future is that there's kind of, you continue being ticklish, but in very specific circumstances, when the touch is sexual, your body is trying to protect itself against something. And sometimes it's very subconscious. You don't even know why your body's protecting itself, but you giggle, you can't control it, and it kind of kills the mood. The person that's trying to turn you on gets very, very irritable because now you're not reacting to their sexual touch. You're not getting aroused.
Probably pulling away as well, right?
Exactly. So what you need to do is both partners need to sit down face to face and they need to build a contract. I'm very strong on building contracts between partners. And this is a place where the person is going to say, I promise you, when I touch you, I will not touch you to tickle you. So the person that has the tickling problem is going to trust their partner. The trust is very important because if you breach that trust, then the contract has been nullified. And every time that your partner is going to try to touch you, you're going to have that same protection mechanism where you're going to start giggling and it's not going to go anywhere. So the contract is crucial to this. You're not going to break that contract under any circumstances. And you're going to build a big trust in between the two partners. Now, the first person, the partner that is going to do the touching is going to start touching somewhere else. So I'm going to touch your thigh, but they're going to explain as well to their partner what they're doing. So they're going to say, okay, honey, I'm about to put my hand on your thigh, and I'm not going to move my hand. I'm just going to touch it. So the husband puts his hand on the wife's thigh and she reacts to it or not, but she learns to control with his touch, with him touching her. Okay. So after she says, yeah, okay, I have no problem with this. He's going to say, okay, now I'm going to start rubbing your thigh. And then she gives permission to her husband to start moving gently back and forth. Once she feels comfortable with that type of touch, he's going to say, okay, honey, I'm going to start touching your shoulder. So he puts his hand on her shoulder. She controls her emotion. She senses this. She feels that there's no threat. And she goes, okay, no problem. I'm comfortable with you touching my shoulder. And then you move closer and closer to the places where she feels ticklish when he touches her. So what all of these steps are doing is giving power to the person that felt powerless with the touch before. And she's also learning to trust her partner that in all of those, every time he's going to approach her, it's not to have power over her. It's always in a way that's very respectful. And she's the one that has the power to say, no, please, you cannot do that. When you do that, you take away the ticklishness sensation of the person and they become more in power of receiving the touch without feeling like they're losing control.
Okay.
So, and most, this works when the contract is not broken, when the two partners are trusting one another, and it just takes a few sessions and after that, ticklishness actually disappears.
Now, during the actual kissing, like say, if she's still ticklish, is that sort of like something that will be over in a few seconds too?
It depends.
You know, like that automatic response, right? Like,
Yes. I think if you do it gradually, then it does disappear. Now she can ask to have kisses that are a little bit more, that put a little bit more pressure. Sometimes just a very, very, very gentle brushing of the lips on the nipples could create a little bit more of a ticklish. Yeah, of a tickle.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah.
And therefore, she could say, listen, is it possible for you to kiss me with a bit more pressure?
Yeah.
Or don't breathe when you're kissing me, just because the change in temperature right. may affect the okay. sensation as well.
Right.
So she can guide him in giving him feedback mm-hmm. on how to make it less ticklish for her. So here again, she's in power because she's giving him the information on how to be touched and how she wants to receive the touch.
And I would imagine an experience like this would be quite so important for the intimacy too, right? Kind of like a team working out together and sharing and being vulnerable and being able to share what you need in that interaction, in that experience.
Yes, it brings people closer together. Any of those exercises that the couple will focus one-on-one at the beginning, people like the couples coming to any sessions, they're kind of, they don't know what to expect. And a lot of the homework that I send them home with, it's partner building, relationship building. It's a lot of getting to know your partner more than, you know, sometimes you've been with your partner for 20 years and you've never done little things like this. You've never had specific conversations. So you think you know somebody inside and out, but you've really stopped learning a while back because you're always doing the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I recommend like going out and asking like specialists when there's a little problem, because if you go right from the beginning, then you nip the problem in the bum right from the start and you don't let it get too big.
Yeah.
So
and then a related question is this from another woman. So she said that when her partner, when her body is being caressed or touched or kissed, she feels very uncomfortable. And she said this perhaps, you know, might be related to her past sexual trauma, but she's really uncomfortable being touched and caressed and kissed, and she liked to be able to enjoy that.
Yes, and that's a good one. And sexologists are not therapists. And the difference is that a sexologist does not have a psychology background. So because they don't have a psychology background, we don't deal with rape or sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So for this person, I definitely recommend that she goes to see somebody that has a psychology background. And if they say they're a sex therapist, they need to not just have an interest in sexology, they need to specialize in it. Sometimes the psychologist will say that they're sex therapist, but they just have interest in sexuality. They're not really taking any classes on it. So if she can ask specifically for a psychologist that has had that education, that would be really, really beneficial for her.
Okay. Another question from a man, and I think this is something that's probably quite common, is that his wife has low sex drive.
Yes.
And he's wondering, you know, what can he do to sort of start to interest her sexually?
To have low sexual desire is one of the most complicated case that I see in my practice. If you look at the numbers, there's about 30 to 50% of the women that will be affected sometime in their life with low sexual, low sex drive. And it's not just women. You also have about a third of the men that are going to be faced with the same type of problem. Yeah. Now, you can understand that a lot of people, mostly men, don't want to go and say, you know, I'm not interested into sex. There's a very bad stigma to go out there and say it to your friends. So those people really feel isolated. It's when they come, they're completely lost. They're really looking to talk to somebody and to be understood and to go from somewhere. So when you have a good sex life, everything is positive. Your satisfaction in your relationship is about 15 to 20%. Okay? So having a good sex life, it's not that important because everything's going well. It's just a small portion of what makes your relationship happy. When you have a problem in your sex life, mostly with low sexual desire, that problem becomes, it becomes a problem that takes up to 70% of the trouble in your relationship. So it's really something that they need to have addressed, which is the difficult cause, okay? So if you look at the causes, what can cause low sex drive? There's so many things. You have to ask about the people if they take any medication. You have to talk about people if they have pain when they have sex. Because if you have pain, you don't want to have sex. You're going to try everything in your power not to have it. Are there some health issues like diabetes or mental health that are stopping you from having that desire? Having, wanting to have sex? Are you menopausal? Are your hormones changing? Are you in a state of your life where estrogen and testosterone are going different levels? So you need to look at this. What's the relationship like at this point? Are you guys fighting all the time? Fighting can be very, very detrimental to sexual desire. Is somebody having an affair? Are you suspicious about that? Are you stressed at work or at home? Are you afraid of your partner? These are all questions that you need to seriously express. Some people also have hidden agendas. Mm-hmm. Some people don't come out and say, you know, like, I'm dating you. But I really, inside my head, I don't want to be with you. I'm a closeted homosexual and I would prefer to be with somebody from my own, gender. Are there fear of pregnancies? Do you have shame about a fetish that you're not able to admit to your partner? So all of these things, if you don't look at the history, it's very difficult to understand where what's the reason behind the low desire of his partner. So you have to have a very open conversation. You have to get rid of all the secrets. And then what happens is that there's a vicious cycle that develops when you don't enjoy sex. So you have bad feelings that are being felt and you don't like it. And then you want to avoid those bad feelings, so you avoid sex. So the examples of some of those bad feelings are feelings of frustrations. Just like your writer said, he's a bit frustrated by trying to approach his partner, saying he doesn't know how to approach her anymore. In order to have sex with her. There's resentment, there's blame, there's anger that people can feel, there's shame, there's guilt, there's humiliation. Mm-hmm. So all of those negative feelings make it very difficult to sit down and have a conversation without pointing a finger and saying, this is your fault and we're feeling this. Yeah. So where do you go from there?
And that's a big conversation, right?
It's because, a very big conversation. So if you don't have any guidance and you've been in this relationship and in this vicious cycle for a long time, you do need to go and talk to somebody. They're going to try to shed some light on all of this. But most of the time, how you're going to break the avoidance of sex, you're going to have to build bridges to desire. So a lot of the time, people with low sexual desire, they have very few ways that they feel desire. So now you're going to have to go out there and you're going to have to try different things. You're going to have to try, let's say, the person, she can only think about having sex after one glass of wine if he massages her feet, and once they're in bed on Friday night between 9 and 10 o'clock. That's a very narrow window. You need to be more flexible. You need to increase the amount of time that you spend with your partner that it's going to be non-sexual, but that you're touching more. So now you're starting to touch one another, even though it's not Friday night between 9 and 10. So now we're going to talk about sexualities, and we're going to talk about what about your fantasies. We're going to bring sex into our conversations as well, not just under the covers in the dark. We're going to start touching more, like I said, but non-demand pleasuring. So every time, what happens when you've been in a long-term relationship is that you start touching one person, and as soon as your partner touches you, that means they want sex. That means, oh my God. But yes. Then
it's that immediate pressure, right? For the person who's not interested in sex, uh-oh, he wants something or she wants something, and then you turn that off even before that.
Exactly.
That time.
So now you're going to say you're going to touch and it's not going to end up in sex. And that's a big relief for a lot of people. And what's really good about this is that when you touch somebody, you release oxytocin. Yes. And oxytocin is a bonding hormone. You feel that you're more connected with your partner. So anytime that you have a chance to touch your partner, the partner is doing the dishes, you pass behind them, you give them a hug, you give them a shoulder rub, you walk in the street, you walk hand in hand, make sure there's skin contact as much as possible. Then at the end of the day, the other touch that's going to be, hey, would you like to come and kiss in the bedroom? Then that's a welcome touch.
Yeah.
But if the only time that you touch is like to say, hey, do you want to have sex now? That's kind of a big turn off for most women. It needs to be more romanticized a little bit. And,
kind of leading up to it.
Yes, you need to. It's not because you've been married for 20 years that you stop being a romantic, that you stop, that it's like, oh, well, you're here. Why don't we just go and fool around? So you need to use your imagination at every step of the way. And it's a lot of work, but it's the best work in the world. So you need to add technique. You need to create different erotic scenarios. You need to basically get out of this stagnancy, of the sex life that you've built so far. And hopefully this is going to increase your sexual desire.
Yeah, so it's a constant work, and yet the work will really pay off.
True. But having said that, you also need to have realistic expectations. So when you have low sexual desire, sometimes it's because you don't have high satisfaction with your sexual life. So a lot of people think that every time they're going to have sex, it's going to be a spectacular experience. Actually, there's about 15% of sex in a normal relationship that ends up in failure. Yeah. And sometimes the people fight about it, but the best approach would be, oh, don't worry about it. Next time, we'll do it better than this. So not bringing negative emotions into this, not putting blame on a person, just going like, oh, we missed this one. Let's try again. Practice makes perfect. Next time, I bet you we're going to be a lot better at it.
Yeah, and that would take off a lot of pressure, I think, for both parties, right? Not having that pressure to perform and to make great, passionate sex all the time. Because sometimes, like you said, it could be really exciting and passionate and good. And then sometimes just medium, and sometimes it's just darn lousy.
True. But having said that, you need to be, you need to have respect and trust in between the partner. But the spouse needs to be receptive, open and receptive to what is being proposed. You can't always shut down your partner. Actually, there was a study that was looked at, and they looked at usually the sex pattern is that you have desire, you get aroused, you have a plateau, you have your orgasm, and then you go back down to your stage before you started to have sex. Mm-hmm. For women, what they found was that you don't always start with desire. A lot of the women will start being aroused, and then it will create desire. So for women that have low desire, sometimes trust your partner. Let your partner initiate sex, and then you're like, oh, wow, this feels good. Maybe, yes, it's a good thing that he initiated. So not always slam down your partner and say, I really don't feel like it. Sometimes the want of having sex will come once you start being aroused.
Mm-hmm. So often I will hear clients that I have, the woman would say, you know, I just feel like sex has become a chore. So they gone through the motion a bit, and I guess somehow they don't get aroused, or they don't get in.
Yeah. So for the women that say that sex has become a chore, it's because sex has become something that they do for the other partner. They stopped having sex to make their body feel good to themselves. So at one point, there's always one person that wants to have sex more than the other. So usually the person that has a higher sex drive will come and bother the person with the lower sex drive. And what needs to be done in circumstances like this is that the high sex drive person needs to wait a little bit, and then the person with the low sex drive needs to initiate sex, because then it's going to be when she feels strong enough, when she feels like, yeah, that's something that I want to do right now. It's not something that's being imposed by the person with the high sex drive. So if that happens, when the low sex drive person initiates, then they take control of the situation, and they actually feel like they want to have sex more. It's not, I'm going to do it for the other person. They do it for themselves.
Yeah, that's a really great point, because I remember reading a book from a sex therapist, but also a psychologist, and he wrote a book called Intimacy and Desire, and he talked about how, you know, the partner always has more control, because they decide when, how, what to do in lovemaking, right? And then so and so you said if the person with a high sex drive can wait a little bit, and I guess that's the trick, because they're afraid, what if I wait forever?
True. So, but then in your relationship, like I said, there's a lot of people that use sex as a weapon. Yeah. And if you have a low sex drive and you're just keeping sex to punish your partner, then you need to work on the trust and the respect in the relationship. Like I'm talking about a relationship where both people are in it because they want the relationship to grow, not because they want to kill it. So trust and respect. You're in there not just for your partner, you're in there for yourself as well, and you want this to work. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, then the person is not going to wait forever. They're going to make effort. Or you can make contract again. You can say, okay, I will not, once a week you need to initiate. So on Saturdays, we're going to have sex. You're the one who decides when and where we're going to have sex. Saturday sex is on you to prepare, to plan, to whatever. And if you don't initiate on Sunday, I'm allowed to initiate and to propose sex, and you're going to be more open-minded. Mm-hmm. So little contracts like this are important because they push the person to actually take action.
Would that make them more pressured and even not take action?
Yeah, sometimes it can do that, but then you need to go back to the basics and say, okay, so what's the reason? Why don't you want it? You can mm-hmm. say, what else would be okay? Instead of having sex, what else would you want? So you need to negotiate, because at one point, if you have a sexless marriage, there's going to be a lot of emotions there's going to be frustration. There's going to be anger. There's going to be resentment, finger pointing. And the partner at one point becomes almost allowed to cheat. You know, mm-hmm. sex is it's a necessity in life. It's food.
Yeah. Okay. So let's take a break, and just so that we have a chance to play the ad. And again, we are now talking to Dr. Renee Langto, who is a clinical sexologist. And let's take a break, and we'll come right back.
Are you dissatisfied with your sex life? Has routine set in your bedroom? Having trouble synchronizing your intimacy rhythms with your partners? Hi, I'm Dr. Renee Langto, sexologist. I help people reach a happier and healthier sexual life. Some need a little information, while others need a little trick here and there. But what most people need is to be heard on a subject they rarely talk about. If you want to improve your sexual health, I am the person you need to talk to. Go to my website, drsexology.com, and let's talk.
So again, if you have any questions, call in. The number is 1-888-627-6008. You know, often women are very distracted by things like weight and body image, my boobs too big, my boobs too small, different things. So what are some of the things that they can do to help them feel sexy again?
So if you have trouble with your body image, if that makes you feel uncomfortable, basically... a lot of the women that are, I'm looking for my words, sorry. Yeah. Instead of looking at the entire image of their body, they're very, very picky on particular parts. So what I tell them is not to focus on a body part. So take a step back and to look at everything. I am a beautiful woman, I'm athletic, my thighs are strong and muscular. They're not, instead of always taking negative language, bring positive language describing your appearance. Ask your partner what they see. It's sometimes we see something and our partners are completely in love with like what we think looks horrible. They are completely attracted by that. Take a different perspective when you look at yourself. Often people look, you know, you look down and you see your belly and your belly sticking out. But if you're looking at it from the front, then at that point, your belly, you have a better perspective and your belly suddenly is not as big. Look at yourself in different mirrors. It's also very important to work on your appearance. Workouts, take care of your skin, of your hair. And then at the end of the day, when you give yourself an appraisal in the mirror, you're going to see the work that you've done, where you've come from, and you're going to see the difference in between start point and where you're at. And all your hard work, you're like, I work hard to look good like this. So be proud of the work that you put into your body. Yeah. And then at that point, you're going to see a more positive image of yourself.
Yeah, so a combination of positive self-talk, but also do some practical things, whatever that you need to do in order to feel sexy.
Yes. It's important to take ownership of your look. Instead of feeling like you're a victim, put positive energy, positive attitude into taking care of your body. And then at that point, you're going to move forward.
So what are some of the sexual difficulties the men that you see, they tend to have with the clients?
Well, I have men that come into my practice individually, and then I have them come as a couple. So I have performance anxiety quite a lot. I have a lot of people that call in just for erection problems, but when I tell them I can't prescribe Viagra or Cialis, they don't want to continue seeing me very much. Mm-hmm. They want a quick fix.
Yeah, yeah. So say if they have erection problems, and if they don't use Viagra, what would you suggest for them?
I go back to the basics and I look at desire and arousal, how they get turned on. Sometimes there's a lot of people that have porn addiction, and then you need to dissociate porn addiction from there because those people are desensitized to normal stimulus. Mm-hmm. And therefore, their erections are not going to come up. So the problem is not that it's not anatomical. It's basically their brain has been desensitized by normal sexual stimulus. And instead of seeing their girlfriend undressing slowly in front of them and being aroused by this, they are like, oh no, well, she's not like the all the porn stars that I see, and I can't masturbate at the same time, and I can't fast forward, and I can't change the scene. So they're very, very difficult to get turned on. So porn addiction is very, it's a case that you need to take on its own. But guys that have problems with erection, sometimes it's because they have the pump doesn't work because there's hypertension, diabetes, elevated cholesterol, and all of these clog up the arteries or harden the arteries that are inside the penis, and then the erections don't work as well. Somebody that smokes is going to have more difficulty with strong erections as they get older and as they continue smoking. Mm-hmm. So for a man to respect his body is extremely important because it's going to affect the plumbing, definitely.
So all those sort of unhealthy habits, it's going to affect their sex.
The erections. Yeah.
The erection. Okay. And I think that really affects a man's self-image, isn't it? Because they take the ability to have erection and to be manly. They take that very seriously, but yet they're not able to do that.
That's true. Actually, I teach my male clients when they come in my office, I teach them to behave in a more well-rounded way when they approach sexuality. They come in and it's the end of the world because they have a problem with their penis. And they forget anything else. They forget how to touch a woman, how to wow a woman. They forget that their tongue can do magic, that their fingers can have spectacular dexterity. They forget to use all of the tricks that they have at their disposal. And I always tell them, I go, how do you think two women can have beautiful lovemaking without having a penis? And they always giggle at this, and they always come back. Like, it makes them feel more comfortable when I compare, you know, like what they can do to two women without a penis. So when you take the penis out of the equation, sometimes you have a better, closer sexual encounter with your partner. And a lot of the guys appreciate relearning how to have sex without putting so much emphasis on using the penis. You know, penis and vagina has always been like the main focus of their sexual activity. So when you take that away and they can actually discover all the other activities that they can do, now suddenly it's like, wow, they have a lot of fun just trying.
A lot more repertoires, right?
Exactly. And repertoire is very important.
Yeah.
It takes the routine and the boredom out of having sex repeatedly with the same person for so many years.
So, you know, I work a lot with women who are sort of having difficulties in relationships, sometimes even being abused. So how can they tell the difference between, how can they tell the difference between, you know, being sexually open and sexually adventurous versus feeling sexualized and, you know, perhaps crossing their sexual boundaries?
When you look at that sexual empowerment or sexual objectification, what you need to do is you need to look at who has the power in the equation. So if I want to dress sexy because it makes me feel powerful, I'm the one with the power. But if I'm in a relationship and my partner says, wear this, that's very important, I'm going to meet with some clients or some of my friends and I need you to look very sexy and you need to dress in this, and you feel really uncomfortable in those clothes, then you're the one that lacks the power. And at that point, you become sexually objectified. So in that equation, having, first of all, making sure that you have the consent of the person. So yes, I want to do this. I have the knowledge to take my decision. And if I'm not liking any of this, I can walk out and there's not going to be any repercussions. Then that's really helping me have the power in that equation. And therefore, I can feel, I can be, feel sexual and owning it.
Yeah, and I think it's so important for especially young women too, you know, knowing that you can say no at any time.
Yes.
Or even if, you know, even if you think that was okay at first, but being able to say no or being able to say stop.
Yes. So being able to walk out and nothing bad is going to happen to you, it's a big one.
You know, I remember when I was maybe in my early 20s, I read a book called, what is it now? 203 Ways to Drive a Man Crazy. and it's very interesting because the author, you know, she started out talking like the most important thing for a woman is to feel confident. and to feel empowered. Can you talk more about that? You know, rather than, you know, the actual techniques or all the techniques you have to know, but the most important thing to start with, the basic, is to feel confident and to feel enjoy sex yourself as a woman or as a man even.
So are you asking me what turns a woman on or what? Do you want me to
talk?
I
was hoping you can elaborate more about sort of, you know, that sexual confidence. Is that the, is the techniques or is it the sexual confidence that that is important to start with?
In order not to feel objectified, is that what you're talking about?
No, just even in general.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I think sometimes we're very worried about, you know, what to do and how to do this and how to do that. But
confidence is always something that's very sexy. If you put it in a man or if you put it in a woman, a man that knows that he's virile, he's confident in who he is, he's good in his work, he's a good, I don't know, whatever role he has in society, confidence is very sexy. For a woman, it's the same thing. When you see a woman that enters a room, regardless of what she looks like physically, if she feels good in her skin, if she knows who she is, it's something that people are strongly attracted to. If I look at the difference, what makes a man look nice, you need to be, you know, a lot of the time you need your man to be, to look like a man, and that's going to turn you on. And if you look at a woman, she needs to be feminine and sexy, and that's going to turn you on. When you have those qualities and you know you have them and you walk inside a room and everybody stops what they're doing and they stare at you, it's a very powerful tool. It's a strong sexual asset to have. It's owning your femininity or owning your masculinity. And it's, I don't know, the people that know who they are, you know, like that work hard at who they are and they do it well, they present it very well to the world.
Yeah.
People like naturally,
just radiating
completely and they attract a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. So what tips do you have for couples with children?
Lock the door.
Lock the door, yeah.
That's an excellent question. You know, right now parents are being asked to do everything. They're being asked to become parents first and to forget that they're partners to one another. And that's a very, very big mistake. I think that you need to, first of all, your children will learn from you. They will learn that mommy and daddy have a very particular relationship. So I don't think that you need to hide the kisses and the cuddles that you give to your partner because your children are there. I think it's very important education for them. I think that at one point you need to tell your children, perfect, it's 8 o'clock. Now it's mommy and daddy time. So now it's time for you to go to bed. And unless there's a fire or you're dying in your bedroom, do not come into mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a lot of my my friends that have children, they're always very surprised to see that my kids, once they're in their rooms, they don't come out. Yeah. And I said, yeah, it was a very difficult week. But after the week, they understood that, no, once you're in bed, you stay there. You don't need to come out. And when they see that that's the way it's done, they don't fight it. So be a little bit more firm with your children. It's going to break your heart. It's going to be very, very difficult for you as a parent to say, no, honey, I can't do that. But it's going to be beneficial for you and your partner. And it's also going to be beneficial for your children in the future when they start having relationships, and eventually they'll become parents as well. And they're going to probably imitate what you did as a parent to them.
Yeah, no, that's a very important boundary, right?
Yeah.
And like the point you said earlier, be partners first mm-hmm. before parents, because if you are happy with each other, then there's not a lot of stress in parenting. You're a lot more emotionally available to your children. Whereas if you have a lot of tensions with your spouse, chances are they will pick up on that a lot too.
Oh, true. And also your children will leave the house eventually and you're going to be stuck with your partner if you guys did not separate. So if you don't want to be living with a stranger in the future, this is a relationship that you must not forget about. It's not because you're a parent that you forget about your partner. So I always tell my...
locking the door and then having a night or having the time. Anything else?
Making sure that your children know how much you love your partner. It's good for them to say, I love mommy, I love daddy, and that you say, oh, I love you, honey, but I love daddy too, and daddy is the most important person in my life. So you need to reassure your children, but you also need to show it in actions. So my children are a bit older now, but at one point they were saying PDA, public displays of affection.
Yeah.
And the more they said that, the more I did public displays of affection. So they stopped saying that because they saw that a reversed reaction. So instead of me stopping public displays of affections, I did more. So they said, okay, no, I'm not going to bother my parents anymore on this. And my children are proud when me and my partner have a close relationship. They feel more confident in the household. Their studies go better. Everybody's comfortable because it's stable in the household. Mm-hmm. So locking that door at night is not a bad thing. It makes
If they're not used to giving public affection, and they mm-hmm. start, and then the children might say, ew. So basically what you're saying is kind of getting used to that. And then over time, they will get used to you being affectionate in front of the children.
True. And I always think that it's better to show people the world that you're in love instead of showing the world that you're fighting. People have problems screaming in front of other people. But like giving a kiss to the person that you love should not be done in public. I think that we have it a bit mixed up. I think it's better to show public displays of affection than to show that you're angry at somebody when you're driving or whatever. So more love, less hate.
Yes. Anything else you want to add before we end here today?
That is the fastest hour I've lived.
Really? Yeah. Good. No, I mean, we've gone by fast too. And I guess people are concentrating, listening to us and didn't call in. But I really enjoy our conversation.
Me as well. So, thank you so much.
No, thank you for coming onto the show tonight. Again, this is Dr. Renee Langto, a sexologist from Vancouver. To learn more about her services, visit drsexology.com. And join me again in two Saturdays. That is October 31st. And I will be, we have a guest on the show, an author of the book, The Dance of Anger. So she's a psychologist, an author, but also an expert in women's psychology. So she will talk about different ways for women to assert themselves or to be true to themselves in relationships with significant others. So tune in two Saturdays from now. And tonight, have a sexy, beautiful, hot night with your partner, husband, wives, whoever you have with. So have a good night. And thank you for coming on to the show tonight. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinn Le Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quynle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.